Has anybody noticed it's allergy season? I'm struggling a little bit this morning with my voice, and y'all just try to bear with me. But I think it's having some effect on my hoarseness and coughing a little bit, so y'all excuse me when I have to do that. But in any case, it's good to be with you this morning. Appreciate so much the opportunity to bring you a lesson from the Word of God. I thought Leah would be a good subject. One of the things that we see toward the end of the book of Ruth, as Boaz goes before the elders of the city for the purpose of making Ruth his wife, the elders accept his request, and they reply in Ruth chapter 4 and verse 11, saying, "The Lord make the woman that is come into thine house like Rachel and like Leah, which two did build the house of Israel." And certainly that's the case. These two were very instrumental in laying the groundwork, you might say, for the descendants of Israel that became Israelites and then the Jews. Now, we're often familiar with the fathers of the Israelite nation, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who becomes Israel later on. His 12 sons make up the 12 tribes of Israel. And yet, the four women who gave birth to these 12 are also a very important part of this history of Israel. Now, to look at this, it's history, but there's also a lot of family dynamic going on here. And that, to me, is kind of an interesting part. If you can imagine a situation where two sisters marry the same man, and that man is also their cousin, okay? So it gets interesting right there. But then you enter, a couple of other women into the picture, the handmaidens of these two sisters, and it gets... The stage is set for a lot of drama, brethren. The stage is set for a lot of drama, a lot of interesting situations. And yet, this was tolerated for a period of time, but let us make clear that this was not God's plan for marriage. Moses even warned about that, even back in the Old Testament. In Deuteronomy 17:17, he warned the Israelite kings not to multiply wives to himself, quote unquote, saying that it could lead them to turn away their heart from God. But Jesus also said in Matthew 19 concerning marriage in verses 4 through 6, he's being tempted, put to the test by the Pharisees, trying to trip him up a little bit, but he answers their question concerning divorce. He says, "Have you not read, and he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh." Now notice there's just two of them, one husband and one wife, and they live together one lifetime. But then he goes on to say, "Wherefore they are no more twain but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder." So there's God's plan for marriage very simply laid out here. But one man having more than one wife was not in the plan from the beginning, but God tolerated it and allowed it for this period of time. But in this lesson, I would like to examine the life of Leah and see what lessons we can learn from the experiences that she had. Now, as before, we talked about Leah's family. Excuse me. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But Abraham had a brother named Nahor. And it gets kind of complicated, and I tried to put it up there, and I gave up because it was just a mess. I couldn't get it translated into a picture, so y'all just bear with me. But Abraham had a brother named Nahor. Nahor chose to remain in his homeland of Haran and marry a woman named Milcah. And we have this in Genesis 11 and verse 29. Now, Nahor and Milcah have 8 children, and one of which was named Bethuel, and Bethuel had 2 children named Rebekah and Laban. Here comes Laban. He's into the picture. Rebekah and Laban were sister and brother, according to Genesis chapter 24, verse 15 and verse 29. Now, Rebekah married Isaac, and their son was Jacob. Rebekah's brother Laban had 2 daughters, Leah and Rachel. Now, this made Jacob a first cousin to both Leah and Rachel. And yet, also, it's worthy of note, if we're talking about this kind of thing, if you'll recall, Jacob had an elder brother, a twin, named Esau. Now, if you'll remember how Esau sold his birthright to his brother for a bowl of pottage. And we see this in Genesis 25, verses 29 and 30 through 34. Now, later, Rebekah helped Jacob to deceive his father Isaac into giving him his father's blessing instead of Esau. And we see this in Genesis chapters 27 through chapter 28. So Jacob benefited from this deception very early on. But later, he becomes the victim of another deception. And we'll see this as we get into this a little bit later on. Justin, he already knows where I'm going with this. Anyway, but it's an interesting turn of events and twist where the perpetrator becomes the victim. Tables get turned a little later on. But in any case, when Isaac gave Jacob his blessing, he also instructed him to take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. We see in Genesis 28 and verse 2. Now, this is where Laban comes into the picture and his two daughters, Leah and Rachel. Jacob does obey Isaac, his father. He heads toward Haran in the land of Canaan. And on the way, he has a vision, a ladder where angels are descending, ascending and descending, and the promise that God made to Abraham is repeated to Jacob. Now, we were talking, Justin and I were, about songs that pertain to the lesson, and he said, well, it's kind of difficult to pick out songs for your lesson, even knowing what I was going to talk about, but he actually did. That first song that we sang referred to the prophet whose pillar was a stone. And that's who we're talking about here in Jacob. So interestingly enough, that's when he sees this ladder ascending and descending. So in any case, it was in Genesis 28, 13 through 14, God says to Jacob, I am the Lord God of Abraham, thy father, and the God of Isaac. The land whereupon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed, and thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in thee and thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. So we see from this promise, if that sounds familiar, it was. Back in Genesis 12, as you'll recall, God made that same promise to Abraham. In thy seed, carry on, all the nations of the earth be blessed and so on through thy seed. Well, he repeats this a few generations later to Jacob. Now, Jacob comes near the land of his uncle Laban, and he happens to meet Rachel at a well. She was there to water the sheep, and we see this in Genesis 29 and verse 10. If you have your Bibles, you want to anchor down, Genesis 29, 30 is going to be pretty much where we spend the remainder of the lesson. And Jacob sees Rachel, and he gives her what is probably just a customary kiss for when you meet someone that you're related to, that kind of thing. And he tells her that he's her father's brother. And she then takes him to meet her father, Laban. We see this in 29 verses 11 and 13 of Genesis. Now, Laban offers to pay Jacob for working for him. But Genesis 29 and verse 18 tells us what Jacob wants instead of money. It says, and Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. Well, now the question is, why did he not ask for Leah instead of Rachel? She was the oldest. But verse 17 tells us something that was involved in this decision. Leah was, quote-unquote, tender-eyed. It says, Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. Now, we're not told what was meant by tender-eyed. Maybe it was that she was cross-eyed. Maybe she had trouble with poor eyesight and she squinted her eyes. Could have also been that there are different genetic defects that a person can have that will cause them to have either one eye larger than the other, sometimes both eyes protrude more. On and on the list goes of different genetic defects that can be involved that affect the way the eyes appear in the person's face. So we don't know. We can conjecture and suppose, but whatever it was, it wasn't flattering. whatever it was, it wasn't something that was a desirable thing. But in any case, we see that Jacob does not want Leah, he wants Rachel. And he works out the 7 years, and verse 20 of Genesis 29 tells us, they seemed unto him but a few days for the love that he had for her. So we see here he has a great love, and this is quite a love story we have here in the Bible of how dear his love was for Rachel. But then the time comes at the end of the 7 years, the wedding comes time, and then Laban has a feast and gives Leah to Jacob instead of Rachel. Now, for whatever reason, however the custom was, Jacob does not realize it until the next day that he has been married to Leah and not Rachel. We're not told also, an interesting comment, a sidebar to this, we don't know if the girls were complicit in this, if they went along, if that's what they wanted or whatever, but we know they went along with it, they had to. But we don't know if it was something they wanted to go along with, they were okay with, we're not told, a lot of curiosity things from this point. But we do know they had to have gone along with it. Well, of course, as you might expect, Jacob's not very happy about getting Leah instead. And he confronts Laban, and we see in Genesis 29 and verses 26 and 27, he says, this is Laban's excuse for giving Leah first. He said, it must not be so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. He says, fulfill her week, and we will give thee this also for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. So a week later, yes, he does get Rachel, but he has to serve another 7 years to pay for her in that sense. But if you'll recall now how that Rebekah deceived Isaac into giving Jacob the birthright. So Jacob was the benefactor, as we talked about a little earlier, of getting a deception here over his dad. And yet then you have him being the victim of a deception by his uncle in this. So I think that was an interesting turn of events here, how that one related to the other one, and one put something over, you might say, on the other one. But now let's talk about Leah particularly. Leah wasn't very pretty, as we talked about, wasn't necessarily desirable to look at, and yet she had something that was desirable, especially for that time, and that was fertility. Leah was given the gift of fertility while Rachel was not. And Genesis 29 and verse 31 tells us about the reason why. It says, and when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Now Leah goes on to bear 4 sons for Jacob, and each time she thought that a son would prompt Jacob to love her, but unfortunately, that was just not the case. Each time she had hope, well, maybe he'll love me now that I have this first son. Maybe he'll love me now with the second, and on with the third and the fourth. But she does come to the point where she sees these sons as a blessing from God. And she learns to appreciate that blessing, even though she wasn't blessed with being particularly nice looking and desirable by her husband. She does see that these children are a blessing from God, and she does appreciate that part of it. Now, one lesson for us is that we should look for the good things that God has blessed us with. We sing a song sometimes, Count Your Blessings, and that's what Leah was doing here. You know, she was counting her blessings. She thought, well, you know, life's not perfect, and my husband doesn't love me, but yet I'm blessed with these 4 sons, and so I'll just let that be a blessing and appreciate that. And brethren, that's something we need to do about our lives. We may not have the perfect life here on earth, like quite often we don't. We have issues, we have problems, we have troubles, and yet in other ways God will bless each and every one of us if we will just look for it and find the blessing that's in our lives, because indeed all of us have blessings that we can count, and quite a few of them. So instead of resenting the things that we might not have, we need to appreciate the things that we do have. So one of the things, though, that we see in Rachel is she wasn't so pretty on the inside, brethren. Wasn't quite as pretty as she was on the outside. And she had resentment in her heart. And we're told that Rachel envied Leah and resented the fact that Leah could have children and she could not. And this allows us to see the true nature of Rachel. And she confronts her husband, Jacob, with her resentment and frustration. And in Genesis chapter 30 and verse 1, we see it tells us, "And when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said unto Jacob, give me children or else I die." Now we can see some emotions here displayed. Now it's not so told in so many words, but it's evident. She was very emotional about this whole thing. She was very upset about this situation of being childless. And she was just lashing out at the only person that was evidently available to lash out to, her husband. Now, of course, Rachel's lack of children, it's evident that it's evident that it wasn't Jacob's fault, because he had children by Leah, so he was not the problem. She was apparently the problem, and it became obvious. But Jacob gets mad at Rachel. And his anger is kindled against her, and he said, "Am I in God's stead, who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb?" He's basically saying, "It's not my fault. You know, you're complaining to the wrong person. You're complaining to the wrong source here. You need to take up your complaint with God rather than me." Well, in her frustration, what was customary at that time, she offers her handmaiden, Bilhah, as a type of surrogate mother. And Jacob complies with Rachel's request, and the son is counted as Rachel's son and not Bilhah's son. Rachel names him Dan, and she was the one that named him, you see. So even though it wasn't born to her, she still got to name him. And so we see the nature of the laws for that time. It was counted as her son rather than Bilhah's son. Also, another son was born to Bilhah by Jacob, and Rachel counts this one also as her own and calls him Naphtali. Now, eventually, she does have two sons. And Leah also goes on to have another two sons and one daughter. And she also claims two sons by her handmaid as well. Her handmaid's name was Zilpah, the handmaid to Leah. So Jacob is the father of 12 sons and one daughter by four different women. Now, eventually, Rachel, she has Joseph and then Benjamin. And then when she has Benjamin, she dies in childbirth. And she has to be buried as Jacob is returning to his homeland in Canaan. And yet then later on, this is Genesis 35 and verse 19. And then Leah is later buried in the same place as Abraham and Sarah, and as eventually Jacob is buried. So we see that Leah gets buried and laid to rest with her husband, but as it turned out, Rachel does not. So what about some of the lessons that we can learn? We've talked about one before, how that God looks on the inside of a person. One lesson we can learn is God does not see the outward beauty that a person has, but the inward beauty. And God is able to see us in his service, even if we're not perfect. You know, Leah, if you think about it, there were 12 tribes. She gave birth to 6 of them. She was the tribe of half of the Israelites, the Israelite nation. She was the mother of 6 of the 12 tribes. So consequently, God did great things through her, through her ability to have children. And yet also, as a lesson for us, God can do great things through us as well. Now, we might make our mistakes, and we sometimes fail to do what we ought to do, and we have our shortcomings in one way or another. Leah had her shortcomings as not being as pretty, but yet she had good qualities as well. This gift of fertility was a good quality that she had, and it was used by God. God can use our abilities in so many different ways. We all have talents. We all have abilities. We all have things that we can do and contributions that we can make to God in the service of God. And Leah gives us a perfect example of someone who utilized what they could do and had what they did have. And even though, no doubt, throughout her life, as we talked about this family dynamic, she had to have been frustrated. You think about it, you know, all these children and your husband doesn't love you. He really doesn't care much about you. Apparently, he was even repulsed by her to some extent. But yet, she takes that all in stride, and she makes a contribution where she's able to make a contribution. And you know, as long as we get back up, brethren, when we fail, as long as we begin each day with a new determination to do the best we can, God can do great things with each of our lives. If we'll serve him and please him and help us help work to grow, he'll help us grow in our usefulness toward him. So that's certainly a lesson for us today. And we also notice, too, that when we study the history of the Israelites, we often speak of the men and how that Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, David, and others down through the line were the fathers of the Israelite nation. And yet we saw, as we began in Ruth, the book of Ruth, Leah and Rachel were named as being part of that as well. Leah worked quietly in the background. She did what she could to serve God. You know, just because we're not doing something that people can see and offer praise to us for our work doesn't mean that God can see it. There's a passage over in Matthew that we could look at along those lines in Matthew chapter 10 in verse 42. Tells us, "And whosoever shall give to drink unto one of these little ones a cup of cold water only in the name of a disciple, verily I say unto you, he shall in no wise lose his reward." So even though we may not do things that are in the front lines, you might say, even though as Matthew 6 and verse 18 talks about it, it says in Jesus in his Sermon on the Mount, he says, "Thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly." And on this occasion, he's talking about praising and doing alms and so on and so forth, doing things in a public way to be seen of men. And he's saying, well, you know, you're having your reward right then and now when you're doing something to be seen of others, where people come up to you and they pat you on the back. You did a great work there. You're doing a great job. Everybody's, you know, really happy with the things that you're doing, and you're showing off all of the things that you're able to do for God in order to get the praise of others. And he says, you've got your reward right then and there. The real reward comes from things that are done in secret. Brethren, things that are behind the scenes, things that maybe nobody knows about or very few people know about. And I know in this congregation, a lot of people make phone calls, they write cards, they prepare food, the list goes on and on, make visits and so on and so forth. Things that are kind of behind the scenes, you know. Things that people don't come up to you and say, man, I really appreciate, you know, you're doing a great job. And hold on and on, the list goes, and the whole congregation goes out, and they thank you every one by one as they go out. And as a preacher, I've had that experience, where, and I know Justin and others have had that, and it's good and encouraging to us. But at the same time, there are people who work in the background, the people who don't get that kind of praise, don't get that kind of recognition by the congregation. But guess who knows what you've done? Guess who appreciates what you have done? That's the God of heaven. And so that's a lesson for us today. God blessed Leah, and yet she worked in the background, but she got a tremendous blessing just the same. And we are also recognized by God, even though we do things that may not seem so important to us. You think, well, that's just a little thing. Well, this cup of cold water was just a little thing too, but Jesus took time to note it and mention it, and he says it's going to have its reward. So that's an encouragement to all of us to do those things that even though it may be in the background, it's still noticed by God. But Rachel gave us a lesson also, you might say, on how not to be. She's one of those who saw the glass half empty. She was a pessimist, you might say. She couldn't appreciate the good qualities that she did have. She only focused on the faults, the problem that she had. She thought she should be able to just have it all. But, you know, we all have our problems. We all have our shortcomings. And we should not allow them to negate our abilities to serve God. You know, someone would say, well, if I can't do that, then I just won't do anything. You know, I'll just take my toys and go home kind of thing. You know, that's sort of the attitude that Rachel had. She's like, yeah, I can't have these children, and never mind that I'm beautiful and everybody loves me and all this kind of stuff. And especially her husband loved her so dearly, he worked 7 years to have her. That just missed her totally. It's totally unappreciated by that. She's focusing on the deficiency that she has. And brethren, if we do that, it'll cripple us. If all we do is look at what we don't have and focus on that and resent and blame God and on the list goes, is what she's blaming Jacob here, and he says, I'm not God, it's not my fault. And who knows whether or not she took the blame to God, but nevertheless, she's trying to blame somebody. Now, if we play the blame game and resentment and frustration and allow that to cripple us, we won't be effective in our service to God. And so that's one of the things we can learn a lesson of what not to do when we look at her life. We may not be able to do some things in service to God, but just like Leah, we can find other things, and we should look for other things in ways that we can be useful in our service to God. And they're there if we just take the time to look for them. You know, there are many characters in the Bible that we could use to teach us many lessons, like Leah and Rachel, but yet we just need to realize that these two were given credit for building the house of Israel. They did great things, and we can do great things as well for God if we'll just give ourselves a chance and work toward that. But let me encourage you, before we ever get a chance to do these great things, it's important to become a Christian. So let me give you the opportunity today in faith, repentance, confession, and baptism for the forgiveness of sins to become a Christian if you're not already. You've once done this and have strayed away, we encourage you to come back to your first love. If we can help you in any way, we'd like to do so if you'll let your needs be known as we stand and sing the encouragement song.
I have decided to follow Jesus.